Argument, United States v. Irons. Mr. Lawless.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Lee Lawless for Appellant Frederick Irons. We're asking for a remand in this case for one full and fair chance to litigate what Frederick Irons' quantity of drugs should be with regard to a motion for a reduction of his sentence pursuant to Amendment 750 of the sentencing guidelines.
And what you want of the judge. The judge, you have a there's a very detailed discussion in the probation, in the pre-sentence investigation report, and it concludes 31 kilograms. And the judge said, you know, that he thought that credible and competent evidence supported that analysis. So what more is he supposed to do?
Judge, if I could, to understand this case, I think you have to go back to what the issue really was. At the time of the sentencing, it was a minimum of 1.5 kilograms. When this case was originally brought up to the Court of Appeals on direct appeal, the government's own brief said the court found the relevant conduct at 1.5 kilograms. This court, in its unpublished opinion...
I don't understand. I'm looking at the judge, what the judge said on January 4th, 2013. And
yes, sir. Essentially, he's saying this is the law of the case because I decided it before.
That's not what he's saying. He's saying the court finds that the credible and competent evidence supports the assertions made by etc., etc.
He gives no... All of those are the assertions...
I don't know why you call that law of the case, and I don't know what you want him to add to that. What's he supposed to say?
He had asked for an opportunity to brief the case that was denied, and the court entered this order.
Well, what are you going to say in the brief? That you disagree with the probation department's report, right?
Well, the court never gives any reason.
What reason do you want? He looks at these 29 paragraphs, and he says, "Yeah, it looks persuasive to me." Well, what do you want? Do you want a hearing or what?
Judge, we're talking about a person spending 20 years in prison.
That's an irrelevant observation. I'm asking you concretely, what did you want the judge to do on January 4th, 2013?
This court is held in...
Would you answer my question?
Yes.
No, you answer my question. Don't tell me what a court said.
I will.
No, you answer it now.
I'm going to try to. I believe the judge, when there's conflicting testimony about the quantities, and there was here between Lonzel Simmons, Barry Dabney, Saxon Simmons, Thetis Johnson, and Jerome Johnson, that the court has to explain why it's choosing one particular version of the events, and that wasn't done.
So you think he needed to go beyond what the PSR said and had to resolve those conflicts and make particular findings as to...
Well, there's a lot of confusion about the PSR because the PSR bases the 31 kilos on what Lonzel Simmons says. But when there are objections filed and there's an addendum filed, it doesn't rely on Lonzel Simmons. It relies on the other four individuals, none of whom add up to the 31 kilograms. And then at the sentencing hearing, what we have is the case agent testifying to the versions of what five different people told him.
Because none of them hit the stand, just the case agent.
That's correct.
So in terms of making credibility findings, the court had the case agent who relayed what they said but never saw the actual witnesses.
That's correct. And Lonzel Simmons was never prosecuted. His story differs significantly, I believe, from what Barry Dabney and Saxon Simmons say, because they say we were along on these trips with Mr. Irons. And Simmons, Lonzel Simmons, wasn't. They say who was there, and Lonzel Simmons is not one of those people.
Isn't the confidential source, is he?
He is. Lonzel Simmons is the CI.
He is the CS that they're referring to?
Yes, sir. He was never prosecuted.
And then there's also a conflict in terms of quantity, because I think someone identified, the name escapes me now, a certain amount of...
Barry Dabney would have added up to something less than the current 8.5. Saxon Simmons would have been just over 8, but under the 8.5.
And they were allegedly on the same trips with the...
Well, that is a little unclear. Yes, it's a little unclear whether they're talking about... I believe that they're talking about the same trips, and they don't say anything about Lonzel Simmons being there on those trips. That's correct.
Do you have to be there to be responsible for it?
No, but there's been a finding here that Irons was responsible, and the government, I believe in their brief, says he's responsible for his conduct over an 8-month period of time.
And is some of that period, was some of that period of time the 3 months when he was locked up?
No, the 8 months is the real time that he was out.
Okay.
The conspiracy here, as I understand it, goes from 1997 to 1999. Irons' involvement in it is for about 8 months of that entire time. It's unclear whether Lonzel Simmons is talking about the entire scope of the conspiracy, and there wasn't any effort made then to narrow down what time Frederick Irons was in it and what he was responsible for.
And then did the defense try to call any of these individuals whose testimony came out through the law enforcement agent?
Lonzel Simmons, the confidential informant, wasn't arrested. I don't see anything in the docket sheet to indicate that there was an application for subpoenas or that there was.
You are just objecting to the judge's failure to have explained his conclusion.
To adequately explain, that's correct. And I don't think that he's ever been presented with any argument or briefing to explain what the contradictions are. That never happened.
Because
that didn't happen at the original sentencing. Mm-hmm. On the first crack motion, the attorney from the Federal Defender's Office in the Southern District of Illinois, who had represented Barry Dabney, who was a cooperator, came in and said, we agree with probation that he's not eligible, and we move to withdraw. So Irons was
that. A conflict situation?
No. The procedure, as I understand it, the Southern District is Public Defender's Office is appointed. They're supposed to confer with probation to determine whether or not probation thinks that they're qualified, that the person qualifies. If they agree with probation that they're not, then they tell the court, you don't have jurisdiction and we would like to withdraw. And that's what they did. And then Irons was left without counsel, and when he appealed the original crack reduction, he was here pro se.
So there was no layout of the differences, although he made some reference in the original.
Yeah, he did, but again, it's right. The problems with pro se litigants.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of what you would like the district court to do if we were to remand this, would be to go through and examine what these conflicts are and make a finding.
And give us an opportunity to brief it, and I think that we would request a hearing. I don't know that the court would be required to do that, but we would.
You mean a rehearing, right? There was a hearing.
Yes, sir. A hearing with regard to the crack motion. I'm sorry.
No, you don't want a hearing. You want an explanation from the judge. That's not a hearing.
I'm sorry. I thought that I said that we would like an opportunity to brief it so the judge would have the benefit of the arguments.
Not present evidence.
Well, I think that would be up to the judge on remand, depending on what the scope of the remand was from this court.
Well, if you're just asking for a fuller explanation, I don't know why he would have a hearing. But What is it that I'm unclear how the, you know, these amendments, these crack amendments, how they affect the sentencing issue. He was sentenced. We affirmed. Why is it back?
Well, there have been two different amendments, 702 and 750.
How do they affect the probation, the accuracy of the probation report, or the significance of the probation report?
Well, the question is what was really found?
No. The question is why he was sentenced. Based on the 31 kilograms, we affirmed. Why are we considering it again?
But that's not what. Nobody cared about 31 kilos back then. All anybody cared about was more than 1.5, and that's what this court said. So the rest of it out there is pretty murky.
And, well, so initially it was the 1.5, and then with the other guideline,
it became 4.5.
So the court never had to reach that because it was so clear from the PSI, initially, the PSR, that it was over the 1.5. And then it was clear, arguably, on the 4.5. And so, in other words, the court never had to assess because if you took what was left that was not disputed, there was enough there.
If you took Saxton Simmons or Barry Dabney, both of those would be over the 4.5.
Well, what about the first appeal? Was the 31 challenged?
The 1.5 was challenged, and that.
My question is, was the 31 challenged?
That wasn't the issue,
just answer my question. Was the 31? Instead of arguing with me, answer my question.
I'm trying to answer.
No, you're not trying. Because I asked you a simple question.
The court's finding.
Would you not interrupt? Also, I asked you a simple question. Was the finding of 31 kilograms challenged on the first appeal? That's a yes or no question. Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, your time is up. So, Mr. Garrison?
May it please the Court. My name is Bob Garrison. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Illinois. I think the matter has been pretty well briefed, and the government will stand on its brief, although, of course, I'm willing to answer any questions from
the court. Well, the court said at the sentencing that it, quote, finds that the relevant conduct in this case exceeds 1.5 kilograms. That's a little different than saying it was 31 kilograms, isn't it?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that it is really not, in that simultaneously with that, the court also said the court adopts the findings and facts in the pre-sentence report and thereby adopted the facts and finding in the pre-sentence report that the relevant conduct was 31 grams.
Well, for example, the PSR says the confidential source said he traveled with Irons and Johnson to Chicago and would pick up 18 ounces of crack per trip. Okay? But it also says that Saxon Simmons said that Irons picked up at least 4.5 to 6 ounces of crack each time he went to Chicago. That is a difference in quantity, right? And the district court never reconciled it or said something like, I know that there are these disparities, but even if you look at these disparities or these differences, what's left is more than 4.5. Therefore, that's my finding.
You're right. The court never did precisely what you said. However, the court did make credibility findings, which I think are crucial here, and based on the testimony of Frederick Irons and FBI Special Agent Stonecipher, the court found that Stonecipher's testimony established that the quantity in question exceeded 1.5 kilograms. I would also suggest that...
But 1.5 is not the triggering number now.
Not anymore.
Yeah, so the triggering number is 4.5.
Well, actually, the triggering...
I mean, 8.5, right?
It is indeed.
8.5, that's what it is. That's the number, 8.5 now.
And not to be facetious at all, Your Honor, but there's an awfully big cushion built in here between adopting the findings of the pre-sentence report that the relevant conduct is 31 kilograms and finding that the amount of relevant conduct required is more than 8.5 kilograms. That's a difference of some approximately over 50 pounds of cushion between what is required and what was found.
And I guess the question is, if the 50 pounds of cushion was disputed, whether it is 50 pounds, then maybe it's, I mean, I get that there's that big difference between 8.5 and 331. So the question is, how much in that big cushion was disputed? Like, was everything challenged within that 50 pounds and that difference between 8.5 and the 31 challenged in terms of quantity? Because if there were challenges on each of those witnesses, that's what I'm trying to get to. What's left that wasn't challenged?
How do we get to
8.5 without what's challenged?
Well, I will address that, although I would have to go back and parse the testimony of the defendant, Frederick Irons, at the sentencing hearing, which the district court rejected and found it not credible, in order to find out which parts of the total of 31 kilograms irons said shouldn't be counted as relevant conduct. But the fact remains, the district court rejected that testimony from Irons and found the testimony of Stonecipher more credible. Now, to answer your question directly, on page 9 of the defendant's reply brief, the appellant correctly quotes the judge from the most recent decision it rendered under 3582, which is the matter before the court, and it called attention to the fact that one co-conspirator, Lonzell Simmons alone, which the court found to be the testimony and evidence of Lonzell Simmons to be credible, that Simmons alone would account for in excess of 31 kilograms, if believed. And the court highlighted that, as appellant correctly points out. But, again, the standard here is highly deferential and abuse of discretion. And while the appellant, Mr. Irons, may feel that the court was unwise and improperly believed Lonzell Simmons, the point is that the court did and called attention to the fact that the reports based on Lonzell Simmons' proffer alone would establish well in excess of 8.5 kilograms and would, in fact, account for the entire 31 kilograms. So it really comes down to whether this court believes that the district court made sufficient findings at the various hearings where it repeatedly said we're finding the district court repeatedly said it was finding 31 kilograms based on various fact, whether that sufficiently addresses the new amendment, USSG Amendment 750, which establishes a new threshold of 8.5 kilograms. And it is the government's position that the district court clearly did cite sufficient evidence, which it described as credible, to justify that finding, that it would lack jurisdiction to give the defendant any relief under 750.
Were there co-defendants in this case?
I believe there were, Your Honor.
Did they enter pleas to guilty?
I believe they did, Your Honor.
Did they under oath state a factual basis for their plea?
Your Honor, I simply don't know.
Was it the same judge who took those pleas?
Your Honor, again, I apologize. I just don't know. I was asked to do the oral argument in this case, and I did the best I could. This was not a case that was originally assigned to me. I know that's not an excuse, but I simply don't have that information at my fingertips.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Garrison.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Lawless, your time expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Two quick points, if I could. The credibility finding had to do with Agent Stonecipher, not with people that weren't there that the court couldn't see. With regard to co-defendants, I don't know what was said at their plea, but Barry Dabney, the same court granted a crack reduction motion for him, and he's now out on supervision. Saxon Simmons got a Rule 35 motion. Thetis Johnson got a crack reduction. Jerome Johnson got a reduction under Rule 35, and Lonzell Simmons was never charged. So there were at least two crack reductions that were granted for some of the people that were involved in this self-same conspiracy.
That wasn't the point of my question.
I'm sorry, but,
go on.
I don't know precisely what was said and at the actual. You know.
And were there any other defendants, co-defendants, aside those that you listed from?
There are numerous, and there were a couple different cases that were running simultaneously.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Lawless. And you were appointed, were you not?
Our office was appointed, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So you're a defender, right. Okay, well, we thank you.
Yes, I am from Eastern Missouri.
For your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Garrison as well.